Running Wild with Christine. Today I'm here with Adam Lana. So thanks for joining us for the first video.
Thank you for having
podcast.
Me.
I'm super happy to be here. So Adam and I decided to talk about feminism today.
Yes.
But before we go into more depth about very sticky topics, maybe we can give a bit of background as to who you are, what you do, and then we can talk about the funny circumstances under which we met.
Sure. Okay. Let me think. So I'm an actor. I'm not from, I was going to say from a typical acting background. There isn't a typical acting background. But I have a very varied background, having played professional sport, worked in the city, gave all that up when I was 25. To pursue an acting career, and I haven't looked back since. But that's given me quite an insight into a lot of different worlds, and kind of shapes the filters and how I see the world now. And I say some of all my experiences, you know, creates who I am now, and I think it's given me some interesting insights.
Yeah, I mean, it's always funny because now we've known each other for what, 3 years?
Maybe four, maybe, because it's been my fifth year.
Yeah, but yeah. I think 2016 was my first one. So
three years. Then. Yeah.
So 3 years ago, I was in Antibes, which is sort of like the end of my book, and I get a gig at the Cannes Film Festival. I'm super excited, and I just don't know what the hell is going to happen. It's like the first night, and I had a day job and a night job the first year. Which thank God changed the later years, but I'm during the day I'm at my ticketing office, like pretty straightforward job, and then in the evening my first night is like opening night at Cannes, and I am made aware like 5 minutes before that I have to seat people during the opening dinner of opening night, main like opening everything, the jury, everyone is there, and no one wants to eat because everyone is there to network and talk.
I wanted to eat. Sorry.
Yeah, I think
just
you
to
wanted
say,
to, you were
yeah.
the only person in the room who wanted to eat.
I always want to eat. I've got biscuits now. Carry on. Carry on, please.
But I walk in there, and luckily for me, I was so clueless after like 8 years in North America as to any of the French people.
Mm.
I mean, of course, I knew who the jury was
and
that stuff, but like most of the people in there, I have no idea who they are.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm interrupting these people who are having these important conversations right after the opening ceremony. They're like, please, will you go and take a seat? And they're like, fuck off. Like, leave us alone. I just managed to talk to blah, blah, producer of blah, blah that I have to talk to.
Yeah.
And I bump into this guy that I helped that day with his tickets in
yes.
my day job.
Yes.
And mind you, like, I'm a hostess. I'm nobody. I'm part of the wall. I'm a plant. Like, this is my level at this night. And Frank, this guy that I helped throughout the day with his tickets, comes to me and just like kisses me, you know, the French bees, like, hi, how are you? And goes, this is my friend Adam, and introduces me to Adam, and I'm like, I'm not supposed to be saying hi to people. I'm supposed to be invisible. But okay, hello. And that's my version of how we met.
That's, yeah, I mean, obviously that mirrors my version of how we met. Mine's slightly different. I've known Frank for some years, and shout out to Frank Mannion.
Hey, Frankie.
Frank Mannion, the legend.
The legend.
The film producer legend that he is. And yeah, he got me involved in a film that I worked on, did a very small, short stint on, a small character. It was a friend of a friend. And Frank's just a legend. And I hadn't seen him in a number of years. And it was that night that I'd seen him for the first time in ages. I was like, Frank, what are you doing here? You know, there's big film stars and all these amazing people.
What were
Frank.
You doing there, though? Let's backtrack, because
well,
everyone knows what my day job is. What was your position?
I had an official invitation.
I know you did. Unlike Frank, potentially.
No, I'm sure Frank did. Frank does every year. To all the parties he goes to.
He has invitations I don't know where from.
Yeah. Yeah, Frank, a legend. So for anyone that's listening or watching, yeah, so... Frank is a film producer who has taken both of us to so
insane
many different parties.
Insane parties.
And yeah, you'll get a phone call or text from him. Just come and mention such and such his name at the door. And this is the Cannes Film Festival. It's so prestigious and very strict on security. He just blags everything.
He
hilarious.
Has such balls. I've never seen anyone work a security guy the way Frank does.
Mm-hmm.
But
mm-hmm.
with such class.
Like, yeah.
It's just, it's never, you're never like, oh God, I shouldn't be here. It's like, with ease.
So much ease. I mean, he's about my height. He's about 6'4". He's got like this bright white hair. So he really, really stands out in this kind of thick accent. This amazing charm that he has. And that, yeah, he just...
His Irish accent.
Yeah, it's brilliant. So what, sorry, you were saying, why was I there? So, yes, I was saying I'm an actor. I'm also incredibly grateful to have a contract working with HP. Hewlett Packard. And yeah. They are a major sponsor of the Cannes Film Festival. And I've attended the film festival now for 5 years. And my job for them is I look after their VIPs, their guests. I take them on what's called a behind-the-scenes tour, so I explain what it's like to be at the film festival as a filmmaker, as an actor, and certainly sort of the people who are attending the film festival as well. So a lot of their VIP guests have never been to a film festival before. So
and Cannes is particular, even if you have been to.
It's outstanding.
Yeah.
So yeah, so it's really important. If they're only there for 24 hours, they get a good insight into what happens at film festival, and certainly what HP does. And part of the one of the major bonuses of me being there is I get tickets to films from them, which is amazing.
You do.
And I get tickets to events like where we met.
Yeah, it was a crazy night. I mean, for me that was like my first day at the festival. I mean, I just, you expect that you'll bump into stars and whatever, and you're excited about it. But this was being thrown into the lion pit. I just,
meeting
you know,
me and Frank. No, I know, right?
You.
Yeah, I mean, this is what everybody goes to Cannes for, is to meet us.
I mean, I believe everyone should meet you and Frank, because that has changed my Cannes experience. But no, it's just crazy. I'm standing there. I think it was halfway through the night I got really tired of just being ignored and not listened to, which is natural and it's
mm-hmm.
normal.
Mm-hmm.
And then just Julianne Moore just walks in straight to me and goes, where can I get some champagne? And I was like, right here, you can have whatever you want. And just has a chat with me about French people drinking coffee late at night until like she actually goes and sits down at her table without me having to say anything. And I was like, thank you. Someone a bit reasonable in the last 10 minutes. But yeah, so, and then after that night, we saw each other a few times that year.
Yes.
I met your wonderful girlfriend, who's also an actress, who...
Little shout out for Alex Wilton-Regan.
Yes.
Yes.
Who is not with us today. She'll be on the podcast one day. I'll get her on, that's for sure.
Oh, I'm sure.
But yeah, so we hung out a bit that year, and then we saw each other every year since, like Cannes crew.
Yep. Pretty much, yeah. Hanging out.
And then this year, it was particular.
Mm.
This year was a weird can for everyone, I think.
Mm-hmm.
And you and I, halfway through, decided to go for dinner and just get away from the glitz and the glamour and the bow ties and the heels.
Mm-hmm.
And inevitably started talking about Me Too.
Yeah, I mean, it was on everybody's lips. It was so incredibly important. Though obviously there was the march halfway through the festival, the 82 women who walked up the carpet. I felt really honored to be there. I took one of the most senior execs in HP, and he said he really wanted to sit too, and we snuck onto the roof of the Palais.
Yeah.
And there were all of the press photographers next to us, and it was an unofficial place that we'd snuck into, and they were kind of giving us the elbows a bit, but we were there so early we just got ourselves in position. And with our little smartphone cameras, we're videoing it and listening to the speeches and stuff.
Yeah.
And it was a really important moment to be there. And yeah, just throughout the entire festival, I think it's really changed the landscape of the film industry, and so much so of the festival as well, where, dare I say it, it was Harvey Weinstein's hunting ground.
Yeah. I mean, after the Asia Argento speech, it's just, that was deafening silence in the town.
But I got up and cheered when she did that.
Oh, absolutely.
I was, and I know she got vilified for that, and I was 100%, I put an Instagram post up there, and I was like,
I remember.
You go for that, because absolutely.
Yeah.
So.
But that was needed. That was like, okay, elephant in the room, smashed, like just.
Yeah.
But it's funny that even before that moment, and potentially, I don't know if it was before or after the march, it was so clear to like both of us, and I think anyone who was at the festival this year, that there was a total change.
Yeah.
Even the movie selection, like a lot of people were commenting that it was, you know,
more female directors, more female filmmakers.
But in general, also topics that were more serious,
yes,
and that needed to be addressed, and
yeah,
less sort of tippy-toeing around things.
And I also think it was led, the conversation leading up to the festival, it was led with such style and such directness by the president of the festival,
yeah,
which was Kate Blanchett, who was,
yeah,
very direct, and this is how we're going to do it. But also just not taking shit on it from any,
yeah,
any press, you know, this is why, this is how it should be done.
Yeah.
And great, and to see the way that she worked the festival as well, I got a chance to speak to her at the end of the festival and just say, I've just watched you work rooms, worked events, I've seen you perform, you know, I'm absolutely, think you, you know, phenomenal, phenomenal job, and thank you so much because you've done such a great,
yeah,
great festival this year.
Yeah, she was.
Yeah.
She was phenomenal. But I think it's interesting, obviously it's interesting to speak about it with you because you're in the industry, but
mm,
I think it's interesting to also sort of, the fact that you're dating an actress and that that has been sort of such a prevalent conversation, and that it should be a prevalent conversation in all industries and,
yes,
in all walks of life. So I think, I don't know how we got to that point in our dinner, but we sort of, I think because I said, yeah, that's how I think it went. I said I didn't write a piece about Me Too,
mm,
even though my publicist was asking me to sort of write an op-ed and have an opinion. And I was like, I don't want to do that because no matter what I say in an op-ed, you have to have an opinion. You have to make a point. That's what it's,
yeah,
for.
Yeah.
And I just knew I was going to be wrong for someone. Someone was going to find what I was saying wrong for them. And I didn't want to, you know, step on anyone or I didn't want to say the wrong thing. And this was part of the problem with sort of closed conversations or opinions. It should be questions. Like for me, it's a conversation to be had, yeah, on a macro level, on a scale, on an industry level, but also on a very much an individual level.
Yeah.
Of like, this is what it feels like for me when this or this or this happens, or when this or this is said, or whatever the topic at hand is, we can't generalize.
No.
And that's why it's a conversation very difficult to be had, because you have to generalize to have it.
Yeah.
To a certain degree.
Yeah, you have to generalize to have it, but also, I can only talk from a male perspective.
But this is also why I wanted to talk about,
yeah,
it with you from a male perspective.
Because we, obviously, when you can't generalize something and you can't be specific about something, and I'm trying to do the best that I can from the male perspective, all I can really do is listen. And I have no point of reference to her and say, oh, but is it this? Or could I just explain that back to you? And you'll be like, no, please don't even mansplain me. But it's, yeah, from a male perspective, it's obviously we're looking, with a logical male brain, we're saying, just give us a list of what it is that you want and we'll deliver. It's absolutely fine. And then also the logical male brain cannot compute with, oh, emotions, and I am doing generalizations here, so
yes,
I must apologize for any sort of male listeners or viewers, because it's not completely true, obviously. I work in emotions and kind of go along those lines of trying to understand, trying to compute all this all at once and assimilate all of this.
But it is challenging.
It's so challenging. And it's not as easy as just saying we want equal pay, because that's an easy thing to do. We can deliver
on paper.
On paper.
Yeah, but yeah, it's easy to understand. You're like, okay, equal pay. We can have a conversation about that.
Yeah. But there are so many different other elements of this. And as a man, I have men confiding in me,
yeah,
that they're finding this a very, very tricky area to work in.
Yeah.
And as a white male, it's really not a bad thing for us to feel uncomfortable right now. It's really not. We felt comfort for many, many years. That's absolutely fine. But how long? You know, people kind of want to go, how long am I going to be uncomfortable for? Because I really don't know. Can I approach a girl in a bar? Can I, you know, at what point can I do this? Or can I,
yeah,
say this? If I put my hand on a woman's back in the office, can I do that? And you're like, this is just our time to listen.
Yeah.
Just listen.
Listen and and open up any communication. Like, I'm not saying, you know, speak, because that's the opposite of listen, but in the sense that if you have a question, ask it.
Yeah.
You know, like, if there is a question to be asked, do it.
Absolutely.
Because ultimately, we were saying in a previous conversation that those men who confide in you usually come from a place of fear.
Yes.
And all of the examples you just cited are very much sort of coming from a place of fear. And I think that fear comes actually from certain strains of feminism, or certain women, or certain people who are so frustrated with the situation and their experiences and their lack of, you know, white male privilege, that the expression of those frustrations comes out as rage, or comes out as anger, comes out as non-constructive communication.
I hate all men.
I hate all men, exactly.
I think I there's a fantastic feminist Instagram account that I follow. I was put onto it by Alex, my partner, so credit to her for putting me onto it. And following her account, I noticed that she got involved in a spat with 50 Cent. And as she kind of got into these communications, and I kind of got wind of it as she was sharing on her Instagram story. And so I sort of joined, I just piped in a bit as well. And then at one point, she kind of went into one which was like, then she just started sharing, I hate all men, you're all assholes, you're all this. And I was torn, because emotionally I was like, well, that's aimed at me, I'm a man. Yeah. But then of course it's not, no, because it's because there are a lot of people jumping on her sort of saying, you know, fuck off, bitch, what are you doing on this? You shouldn't be here. There's no interest to you. And then saying derogatory things about her body. And you just like, I get it. This is not aimed at me. It's, my job is to stand here, stand firm. And it's always been my position with bullies at school, in the workplace, on set, on social media.
Yeah.
I just don't tolerate it, so.
Yeah. And I think that's, but what you said regarding that is pertinent, the fact that, you know, you participated in the conversation until you felt like you were no longer addressed in the conversation.
Mm.
And that is sort of the moment where a lot of people, instead of going, this isn't about me, I should shut up and let, if I'm not going to be constructive, I'm not going to participate.
Yeah.
That's when usually the hate level of the discourse, especially on social media, rises.
Yeah.
And I think that's, for me, that's always very difficult to compute and express, because like you, we sort of discussed this funnily preparing for this podcast, I resisted the word feminist for a long time. I actually got into some major trouble with a lot of my close friends, because in the book, literally, I write, I don't consider myself a feminist. Because at the moment where I wrote it, at the moment that it's set, I didn't. And I don't want to change that fact. Like, that would be untrue to my former self. I definitely do now, but the definition and the standards by which we define certain words are so uneven and so particular to each person that you have to really start to understand what you mean by that.
Mm.
'Cause
it's I mean, the meaning of a word, and I caught a wonderful piece of theatre at the weekend by the Long Sight Theatre Company. Check them out. They're an amazing theatre company. Steve and Sarah set them up. They did a verbatim piece at the weekend in Walthamstow. And I know this piece will be going on again, so I do recommend it. It's called Young Hot Bloods. In the cast was my partner, Alex. And verbatim theatre, for anyone who's listening who doesn't know what that is a series of interviews that are given taken with people. And then the actors will replay the theatres through headphones on stage. And they will imitate those characters but repeat those words. And it was really interesting to see people's opinions of what feminism is or what feminist was. And you had it from all walks of life, all ages, all races. Some people were getting it, some people not. Some people saying some horrific things, like incredibly sexist jokes, like about domestic abuse, domestic violence. And I was really shocked, but then also recalling, I remember that joke at school.
Yeah.
I remember laughing at that joke at school.
Yeah.
And it took me back to suddenly going, yeah, feminist is a word for me. It was the first time the word was raised to me was by my partner Alex, who said to me, oh, you're a feminist. And I fought long and I fought hard against that word. And I said, I am not. I'm into equality. I'm in this quality. Until I realised,
What does that actually mean?
It means nothing. It means absolutely nothing. And the problem, you know, the problem is with that. So if we take social media, for example, or a simple conversation like we're having, and I said, well, I'm into equality. Okay.
Cool.
What else do you like? Paint dry? Do you, you know, what there's nothing there, you know. Pitch up a flag and put it in one camp or the other and go with it. And then, and so going from that to the point where I'm now a guy who will wear a t-shirt with the word feminist on it. It's just a...
I'm going to tag Adam's social media and you'll see lots of, like, great pictures of him in his feminist-y. Well,
you know, I mean, I wear the t-shirt and it's twofold. One of them is I want men to look at it and go, shit, there's a big, like, 6'4" guy wearing a t-shirt as feminist. Like, how does that work? The other one, of course, is for women to see that and say, great, there's a man who's on our side. Because personally, you know, I say our position is to listen. It is. And it's so important that we are actively listening. So we're part of the conversation. Because nothing will move, any kind of movement, unless everybody's involved.
Yeah.
And I say it's twofold, probably threefold. The third one is I want to rile people a little bit and generate a bit of conversation.
Yeah.
So from either sex, if somebody disagrees with it, please come and talk to me about it. I like
yeah.
it.
Yeah. And I think, I mean, it's so funny because before you shared with me that Alex sort of accused you of jumping on the feminist bandwagon when it was sort of like the sexy thing to do.
No, well, put it into context. She said, male feminist so sexy. And then, you know...
And then you were like, okay.
Yeah. I mean, it wasn't hours, it might have been. But yeah, then she was like, oh, you're now feminist. No.
No, but like you said, it,
yeah.
it's... I think that's a sort of very easy way to open up, like just wearing the t-shirt or saying a simple sentence out of context or maybe in context, but, you know, that isn't necessarily... intuitive for certain people. That's an easy way to establish a conversation or a communication channel.
Yeah.
Because we were talking about this with respect to men and their social network and dealing with things like, you know, the fear that ensued post Me Too and all that stuff. And I personally have realized over the last, you know, few weeks that even with my closest friend, me, who wrote a book about my entire life and nothing is secret, and like I think that I have at least figured out how to talk to my friends about open things that are taboo. Like, these are... I thought I'd figure that out.
Yeah.
Nope. Yeah. Like, I just found myself confronted again and again in situations where I just didn't have the tools to be like, you know, in a relationship, I would have been like, we are not communicating, or we need to talk, or even if those sentences don't work, at least you have a framework.
Mm.
In these sort of informal relationships, I was like, how do I tell you that you need to hear what I have to say and I need to listen to what you have to say back, when socially it might not be that natural? You know, it's difficult, it's work.
Yeah.
And who wants to work on something? Like,
this is where the learning is.
Yes.
This is where the learning is in the most difficult areas, and this is where the growth happens as well, is on the edge of your comfort zone. I think there's so many different... You'll see them in motivational charts and posters, and this is where the learning is and where the growth is. And I mean, ultimately, you know, I come from a background of took a lot of exercise, and I do know through doing the hardest exercises is that's where your body grows, that's where you see the most development, and that's where you need to. And we can all do easy things. We can all sit in our comfortable little space, comfortable little bubbles. But yeah, I completely agree with you, and I'm struggling with that. As I said, I have they will never listen to this, so I can say this, but. Some very close friends of mine, who this group of them that I went to school with since I was about 14.
Yeah.
We were in a WhatsApp group together.
Yeah.
And I love the guys to death. They're amazing. They're brilliant guys. They're not in the same industries as me. We all have completely different backgrounds. But within this WhatsApp group is a series of kind of, I say a series, it just says reams upon reams upon reams of pornography and photos of women that... I just see, yeah, and I got on the tube today, and there was this comment, this is great, and it looked like it was the background of something was going on. I thought it was something football related. I clicked on it, and for any of us, I was in the public on the tube, and there was a woman's breast standing in the middle of my phone. I was like, oh my god, idiots. But I am enabling them by not calling them out on it, and you know, this is 100% contradiction of me being a feminist. But at the same time, I grapple with that as in vilifying my friends or having the conversations, how I handle it at the moment, is the levels of communication I'm stepping up. So I start from an initial just rolling of the eyes and saying, do we have to? And every time we meet up, so she's just going, oh, goodness, there's more pornography, are you?
Yeah.
You know, but slowly but surely, you know, it's just going to be a point where I just cut off and say, look, guys, we have to stop doing this. 2018.
Yeah.
You know.
But like you said, I think it's important to actually just remember that it's, because it's hard, you don't have to, like, you know, it's not because you, like, it's not because you don't agree with this one thing that someone is doing that's been sort of, like, ingrained in his brain since he was little to behave that way.
Yeah.
I don't want to say, like, this is a bad person because they do one bad thing. Like, this is not constructive.
No.
None of these, like, radical, non-changing, non-flexible opinions about someone are valid, because, you know, what's offensive to one person isn't to another. I might react one way to this situation today and react a completely different way to the same situation tomorrow. Like, how are you supposed to make generalizations when each individual is, their reaction will change on the setting? And so the little things are how you get to the big things. So just, yeah, even if it's rolling your eyes or saying, dude, really?
Yeah. It's a slow process, but I think I met up with a brilliant friend of mine for lunch today, and I was discussing, I'm going to be going on this podcast. There's a lot of pressure because she has these amazing guests on, you know, and I've listened to talk at great lengths and various different things that you guys go into, and I was like, I really want to make sense of this. And one of the points that, and this shout out to Neil, actually, Neil Fox, a fantastic filmmaker and a brilliant, brilliant brain. He's ever learning, ever growing.
Yeah.
And I really, really feel an affinity with him for that. But he pointed out, it's like you're trying to take somebody who works in the factory off the factory line after 40 years and say, okay, your job's finished, now change your mind and start working on computers without any training.
Yeah.
That's so difficult to do, because someone's,
it is.
You know, if they're stuck in their ways, turn around and say, so there's going to be tolerance on both sides.
Yeah.
Whereas, you know, so if you sit at lunch with somebody and somebody says, oh, check out that bird over there, look at her knockers, you can't immediately jump up and go, oh my God, and point a finger at him and say, we're over, this is it, we're no longer friends. But you can actually turn around and say, actually, that's not really cool.
Yeah.
I'm not good with that.
If they are really nice breasts, you could say that differently. If you're actually complimenting, you know?
Yeah. Let's not objectify it. Let's work our way around this with a compliment in there, and it's not done in such a crass fashion. And then hopefully, if there's tolerance on both sides, that if the woman who's being objectified at the point, if she overheard that, isn't going to kind of leap up and actually turn around and say, thank you very much,
thanks.
I won't hear that again.
Yeah.
And that person who made the accusation, you know, tolerance on both sides.
Yeah, and I think it's interesting what you said about what Neil said about the factory worker is, for me, that goes back to sort of like the root of the rage and the fear. They're basically just reactions to change.
Yeah.
And change is hard. And always has been, always will be. It's just one of those things that we see evolution, we see all these, you know, we study history and blah, blah. But we don't see it on a minute, everyday thing. Or like, you know, it's like, I woke up one day and I realized I put on like 20 kilos. I didn't realize the year before that I was putting on weight. I just realized I was really happy with a lot of things that I was eating. Like, it was just, but those little things add up.
Yeah.
And as much as we don't realize it in a bad way, when, you know, you get shocked when you've done something and it's changed you in a negative way, why don't we start noticing when that happens in a positive way?
Yeah.
Of just like, actually, if I, you know, challenge one person's opinion, just challenge, not change their mind. Just go like, actually, did you think about that before you said it? Or why would you say that? Or why do you feel that way when you feel like something isn't right?
Yeah.
Then one day, like, that'll be a big change.
That's all I can hope for, is if you can make a small incremental changes along the way. And it's funny. It's going back to like this life coaching kind of like management speak. And there's a graph which is like, you know, on change, and it's just like one small kind of percentage that you go up. It makes a big change, a big curve in the end point sort of thing. And I do believe in that. And I think right now, the fear that we're feeling, And there are a lot of people that aren't included in the conversation.
Yeah.
There's a very pertinent piece in this play that saw the weekend, Young Hot Bloods, about 75 women had gathered for a very important meeting. And it, they didn't let on exactly what meeting it was, although I've got a sneaky suspicion. 75 women in the room were all gathered to speak about sort of feminism. And they went round the circle and... Please forgive me, anyone's listening, if I'm bastardizing this story. But they went around, and the final person they got to in the room was this woman who said, she sort of stood up and said, "Yes, I'm the angry black woman here." And as she said that, you know, because she was, I think she was one of the only women of color in the room, if not the only woman of color, I'm not precisely sure. But from there, the conversation kind of escalated. And she actually had the most powerful white woman in the room at one point put her hand up and said to her face, saying, "If I could just stop you there." I mean, you know, it's like there's so many areas here that we're not covering. And everything's getting covered, and we've got social media right now, and everything's exposed, and people can share things, people can vent things, people can video things and share things and say, "This is what's happening."
Yeah.
And we can learn, we can grow from this, but we need to be flexible enough to do that and not hold on to our egos and say, "This has got to be, because this is the way it's always been."
Exactly. And this is it was funny because, you know, we can't obviously cover anything, everything, and we can't address all of it, but the controversial things of, like, you know, guys being afraid of this or that, or women saying, "But I actually like a dude coming up to me at the bar."
Yeah.
You know? I don't want them not to be able to do that anymore.
Yeah.
And it's like, no one said they're not able to do that anymore. That's not how that works.
No.
Like, you can still do that and be a fully sort of functioning, respectful human being who is concerned with consent. Like, that's it's not incompatible. So the fact that we vilify and we get fixed in these, like, "You can't do this, you can't do that. You just have to communicate. Like, it's the only thing you have to do."
Yeah.
Is to make sure that everyone knows what's happening and that everyone is on the same page. Whatever shape that takes.
But that takes... But that's the uncomfortable space.
Yeah!
Is... The uncomfortable space is asking that consent.
Am I being a good person? And if you say no, that means my ego will be hurt. And if all of a sudden guys can't hit on me at the bar, that means I'm no longer, like, attractive. And it, like, it's all ego.
Yeah.
When you think about it.
Yeah. And from the male perspective as well, it's... Do I go over there? Do I go and speak to her? If I do, you know, it's okay if you're going to put yourself out there and throw yourself out under a train because you may get rejected, sure. But if you do get a rejection, it's a polite rejection. Accept it.
Yeah.
Move on.
Exactly.
Don't push the ticket, fella, because, you know, you don't need to. You really don't need to, because just read the signs. And, you know, it is a simple way to training, but is there a blueprint for that? I don't know. I can't remember, you know, my parents divorced when I was young, very similar to yours, very similar age group as well. And I don't remember there being really a blueprint for me of saying, this is how you behave around women. I do know that I've been in situations in my life where I've behaved inappropriately, but I've learned from that. And it's nice to sit with other men who have said, "You know what, I remember when I did this, that was wrong." I shared one of my probably first feminist posts that I shared on Facebook. And I could have shared after, so yes, I've got the wording right, yes, no one's going to be offended, yes, I've done this right. Brilliant.
And then
a guy that I grew up with, who I used to hang out with, said, "Yeah, but mate, do you remember when we used to drive around the car and beep at girls, and we stop and you get out of the car and chat a girl up and stuff?" And I was like,
"Thanks."
Yes, I do. And I'm really glad that I know that's a bad thing now.
Yeah.
But at the time I didn't know, but I had nobody to tell me that.
Well, and I don't think we'll have anyone to tell us that we're doing the right thing or a good job or that we're going in the right direction. We just have to stop being so afraid of not doing it. Do you know what I mean? Like, so afraid that we aren't trying.
I think two men driving around in the car, kind of beeping
on the people. I meant in the future for a different topic. No, I think we agree.
Yeah. I think we could just stamp that one out right now and just say, "Dude, guys, that's not cool. Don't do that." Anyone that's listening, guys, you're considering it, that, the wolf whistling, just write it off.
Unless you know them and you're actually trying to get their attention, like any other beeping.
Yeah. No.
It's like, hey, like, your sister needs a ride or something. That's okay.
Yeah.
Okay, that stuff.
Yeah.
No, I didn't mean like that example in particular. Yeah. I was just trying to say that, you know, back then you didn't. Now you do.
Yes.
And whatever now you might not know, one day hopefully you'll do. But we won't get to that point where like, now I do know, if we don't continue and improve.
And let ourselves grow.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. 100%.
Yeah. And not be sort of, this is super hypocritical coming from, like contradictory considering what we said at the beginning, but this is why I should have written the op-ed. Do you know what I mean? This is why we should say the things that we're afraid to say, because it's going to be wrong for someone, because when that person tells us why we're wrong, we're going to learn something.
Mm.
You know? So
yeah, yeah.
I think if just like the fear and the anger were a little subdued, it would be easier for everyone to say like, well, this is like what I thought, or this is what I think.
Mm.
Can someone enlighten me
yeah.
if I'm wrong?
Yeah.
That would be so much easier if the backlash wasn't just fuck you and how do you know and how dare you and what have you done for me and how do you know my experience? I don't. I'm not claiming to know anyone else's experience other than mine.
Yeah.
And I never will.
Yeah.
That's yeah. just a fact.
No. Yeah, I just think, I suppose from my perspective, there are some... We do need to educate men.
Yeah.
And there are some ground rules that we go on that, you know, and you touch, you know, briefly on consent. And I made a film with an amazing filmmaker, Sophie Black, who she's getting a lot of awards at the moment, a lot of heat around her. And I made a film with her, it's probably about 6 years ago now, I think it was. And it's about non-consensual sex in a relationship. And it's a brilliant little film. It's available online if anybody wants to look it up. It's called Ashes, which is quite hard to find by itself, but if you look up for Ashes and Sophie Black, you'll find it. And for me, as a piece, to kind of research that and really look into that and have conversations with people, for women,
yeah,
consent within sex is very obvious. For men, when you say non-consensual sex and then you also add within a relationship, you can see people's brains just having a meltdown because, and I say, I'm not making a generalization here, just the men that I had conversations with about it, they'd say, but why is that? That's a very grey area. You're like, no, there's nothing.
No, there's no grey area.
There's no grey, there's nothing grey about that.
And I would actually even just go further than you and say that even for women, like our bodies, both, whichever gender, wherever on the spectrum you lay,
mm.
our bodies react to certain things. And they're not in concordance with our brains often. So non-consensual sex within a relationship can happen.
Yeah.
Even for reversed.
Yes.
You know what I mean?
Yes,
because
it can.
It's a physical response sometimes. And,
yeah.
and your brain doesn't compute what's happening necessarily
yeah.
at the same time as your body. So I think it's very important actually to explain to everyone.
Yeah.
What
yeah.
that is. And I mean, it's mind-boggling once you get it that we have to explain what it is. But this is where it starts.
Yeah.
Is not going, how dare you not have done the process that I've done to understand these things? Because it's work. Like, you did the work to get to understand what it is. So, the point is to understand that everyone has to do their
mm-hmm.
path and that you can actually help. Instead
yeah.
of being like, what do you mean you don't know what that is?
Yeah. Yeah. I completely agree. And... Again, you know, any comments, anything you hear kind of from the back of this and somebody saying, oh, you know, Adam was off on this point. Great. Please do, because
yeah,
I want to hear that.
Interact.
Yeah, interact. Do let us know. Do, you know, get in contact with me or with you. Or,
I'll
you know,
tag
comment
both of our
that.
Twitters and
yeah,
our Instagrams.
I'm open to hearing that as well. And I'm only sharing what I know to be from my experience.
Yeah.
So.
And I know one thing that we touched on when we were prepping that I would love to see happen is your idea for a men's support group.
Yeah. Yeah, this is something that I'm really working around my head at the moment to find the right medium for it. But certainly, I say a men's support group, and I don't want it to be a men's group, which sounds super
men's
exclusive.
Club.
Yeah, men's club. I mean, oh my God, that's disgusting. So something where you certainly, you know, anybody is allowed to come along. But for it to be a safe space for people to talk.
Yeah.
And a safe space for people to make mistakes and not feel vilified for them. And just say, hi, I'm here to learn.
Yeah.
This is something I want to learn about. And this is something that I struggle with. And say, hey, you know, great. let's embrace that. Let's embrace the fact that you're here tonight. And let's look at that. Let's have a guest here, a speaker, someone who's going to share something. So this is something I'm working on, like I said, at the moment. I'm trying to find the right medium for it, but I've got the right people in place to do it.
Yeah. And if you guys have any input as to what you feel you would need, you know, if you were sort of a person seeking out such a group, like if any input, like I would love to hear it even just for myself, and then I'm sure it would be helpful.
Like
anyway.
I said, women welcome too.
Yeah. But in
all genders, sorry.
Yeah, all genders. I know we've been trying to work on
that too.
Oh, it's so difficult for me as a non, like English as a second language or whatever
of
number of languages. It's difficult grammatically, but it's difficult anyway. I don't think I would do better in any of the other languages either. But what I was going to say is I actually think that it's really important within feminism to talk about sort of the support that men can give us and that we can give men.
Mm.
In the sense that I was talking about this at lunch too with Anita Cassidy, that you're all familiar with, who was telling me that she realized a few years ago when she was having a sort of texting relationship with this guy who was sort of like a guy she'd been flirting with at the beginning and then became this like sort of friendship.
Mm-hmm.
And he'd gone on a trip and come back and went, "Hey, I'm back." And it dawned on her in that moment that she was his emotional support. That because he was a guy, he didn't have anyone to say, like, these are the things that are happening and these are the feelings that I'm feeling, whatever they are, you know, in a friendly way. And so I think that that's so underappreciated from our side as women, that we have been socially sort of pushed to tell each other everything and share and have open, you know, however flawed they may be.
Mm.
But we at least have sort of that instinctive, it's not instinctive, it's socially constructed, but like, it's easier for us to go like, I feel like crying on the phone to someone else.
It's amazing. I think since, and I call it like the F-bomb, but since I'm 40 years old, and I think it's probably only in the past five, six years, that I've sat down with my male friends and to ask that question, how does that make you feel?
Yeah.
You know, that's how to feel, what's it make you feel? And it's like, yeah, all right. No, how does it make you feel? And it's you know, you have to be prepared to deal with that.
Yeah.
Because you open the floodgates on that as a man with the other men to share that with you. And I have some wonderful, wonderful friends who will share and will be really, really open about things. And it's so incredibly rewarding to be open with your other men. And I think there's a few kind of groups where obviously I know him on one of your podcasts of you were talking about Anthony Bourdain.
Yeah,
and obviously male suicide and men not sharing and men not talking.
Mental health in general.
Yeah, it's absolutely tragic because we need to talk to each other more.
Yeah.
And this can be part of the dialogue.
Yeah, absolutely. And I think there's no way to make it any easier other than just to start. It's not an easy process. It's not easy for us either. It's not, you know, it doesn't come easy for anyone.
No.
And I think that's sort of the key takeaway, is that it is work. It is, you know, a process that's going to take effort, conscious effort.
Yeah.
All the time.
Yeah.
But that doesn't mean that we shouldn't do it, you know?
No,
that
definitely not.
The opposite, actually.
Yeah, no, I do it more. The more you do it, the easier it becomes.
Yeah. Well, I think this is a pretty natural place to wrap it up.
I agree.
Did you have any last minute messages or shout outs or things that you want to say?
No, so obviously I already shouted out Alex, my love. She's a fantastic support for me, and she's pushed me and dragged me through, you know, a whole host of things. But all of it, I'm entirely grateful for on the work that I do. So yeah, really, really good. And obviously to all the guys who won't be listening to this, but I'm coming for you, fellas. Going to be challenging
one
on a few
day.
More things. And the guys who are listening to this, who I love to pieces as well, and all my friends. So yeah. So and thank you to you as well for coming.
Oh, thank you. It was, I think, a really good and needed chat. And I really hope that people get back to us on what their thoughts are, because it just needs to start happening.
Yeah.
Even if it's a tweet. Like, you know?
Yeah.
So thank you. And yeah, thanks to Alix also for being awesome and helping us stay in touch, because I think I stayed in touch with her the first year. So that's really nice. And yeah, as I said, I will be posting all the links to all of Adam's shout outs in the description of this episode. Please don't forget to subscribe, rate, review, like, tweet, whatever the social media you want to use. And we'll see you next Friday.
Yeah.
The podcast you just heard was published with Anchor. Got something you want to say to the creator of this show? Send them a voice message using the Anchor app, free for iOS and Android.